Hello and welcome to Shuffling Notes. This is the channel where we discuss music because we just love music. And I'm your co-host, Razi.
And I'm your co-host, Prankit.
And today we'll be discussing one of a very talented guitarist, John Mayer. And his album Room for Squares, which was his debut album back in 2001. And the title is actually taken from a 1963 album by Hank Mobley, which was a jazz album. And it was called No Room for Squares. And I was going to share a song with you earlier from that album itself.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I was reading that too, like being a reference to No Room for Squares. But I guess the main thing is when I learned that, you know, how young John Mayer was when this album came out, you know, being 23, 24 years old, I think it put a lot of the songs in perspective for me. So later, as when we'll discuss like the track listing, it'll be very interesting to see that, you know, how his maybe his experiences influenced the tracks. And I guess the only other thing from the outset I want to say is that I think there's a lot of interesting like musical combinations in terms of like the tune, the rhythm, the beats, and even like the percussion sort of instruments used throughout the album. It's very interesting. And yeah, I think, as you said, I think John Mayer, I've always seen him as like a guitarist or musician first and then like a singer, as opposed to like a straightforward singer-songwriter.
I think it's the same for himself.
Yeah. I think he approaches a lot of the songs in that manner where it's, you know, he has a lot of creativity in him when it comes to like the musical composition and all of that. Yeah.
So we'll be going by the track list and from the album. When was the first time that you listened to John Mayer? And you knew this was John Mayer, this was good.
Yeah, that's a difficult one because I realized after the fact that I had heard a lot of John Mayer songs before, but I'd never really sort of known about John Mayer as such. And I guess because at the time, you know, when especially when he became mainstream and popular, I guess I wasn't really into that music at that time. And but I'd heard a lot of the songs without really knowing. But I'd say like the first song specifically from this album is probably Your Body is a Wonderland. I think that's the song as well that introduced me to John Mayer, that, oh, this is a John Mayer song. Just because that song was like everywhere for a long time.
So the given the year, like 2001, and I think by the time the song caught on fire, like music videos were really becoming a thing, and this particular music video, along with other John Mayer videos, like later on, like got fire, and that was when I was introduced to John Mayer, and I started reading up about him, started listening to more songs from this album particularly, and I think Your Body is a Wonderland would be a start for many, and
I think a lot of people were probably introduced to John Mayer that way, just because I guess how big that song got. And I think overall this album was quite well received, right? He like won a Grammy for it as well. So I think, it was a really strong debut album to sort of introduce him or push him into this sort of music industry moving forward.
True. I mean, he did come up with an EP, I think, beforehand. And that got... As people got to know about this new upcoming album, and that got people intrigued, like because they had already heard John Mayer on cassettes on what was then SoundCloud, and I think he was like people were really interested in knowing how he's approached songs and the music in this particular album. Yeah. So We can start with the first song, which is No Such Thing, which I think it opens up the album very well, because it kind of introduces you to the journey to what midlife crisis is going to be like, or what a rebel wants to speak out in the form of art in this manner.
Yeah, there's a lot of like going against the norms, and I guess like growing up in a sense, yeah, of like, and so I think the first line of the song, which is "Welcome to the Real World," is also the first line of the album, which I think it's very poetic, yeah, like this being his debut album, studio album.
Yeah.
And it's very much his, I guess, you know, even because even after his EP, this, I guess, was his like proper introduction into the music industry, and also like into fame and into, you know, celebrity and all those things. And so like "Welcome to the Real World" being the first line, there's just something poetic, you know, about that. And I guess the song kind of sets up the album as well, because like it's a little bit about the struggles, as you mentioned, you know, like growing up, but then there's, as you mentioned, like rebelling, going against the norms and like defining who you are. And a lot of the songs sort of deal with these type of themes. But I think it's a really good song to like set up the rest of the album moving forward.
I think the even song starts with like this energetic note where like the beat drops as soon as he's like, "Welcome to the real world." And then that's when the beat drops and
it pushes you in.
So the next song also questions something like a midlife crisis, which is "Why Georgia?" And I think, what would you like to say about it?
Well, so I like, firstly, I like that line. He calls it the quarter life crisis, which is very appropriate given his age, right? Mm-hmm. And again, I guess it, following on from the previous song, it sort of further builds into like him trying to do something different, but also questioning it. Like, is this the right way? Am I living, you know, there's a line, "Verdictless life, am I living it right?" And so I looked it up. So, you know, there's the line "driving down 85 in," which I thought maybe he talks about driving at, you know, 85 speed miles per hour or however. But it's actually referring to Interstate 85, which is in Atlanta, which is the capital of Georgia. And then it makes more sense, you know, why Georgia as well. And apparently he took a big risk moving there at the time. And he did it for music, but he wasn't quite sure where, if this is leading anywhere, if he's going to get what he wants. Which I guess you can see a lot of that anxiety and insecurity in this song. You know, at the end, I think he also says, "Don't believe me when I say I've got it down." It's like, because, you know, you often, especially in your early 20s, you might act like you have it all together, but inside you're not quite sure where your life is headed and whether you're going to achieve all the goals that you've set up in life. So
I think
it's,
he also,
it's a very appropriate song coming off No Such Things.
And he really embraced into like the guitarist in him, that artist. He really wanted to break through and you know, do something different with the guitar. And I think most of the songs cover a lot of, they have the solo sections in each song where he introduces a lot of music, a lot of
some sort of instrumental
music based around his guitar. And then we go down to "My Stupid Mouth," which if you connect it to a 23, 24 year old, and which who John Mayer was at the time, and
what I mean by knowing, like, I suspect if I didn't know anything about John Mayer and I was listening to this album, I'd probably assume it's like a perspective of someone in their 20s, like someone facing the world for the first time, sort of. But just knowing that, you know, this being his first studio album and stuff, it really, again, puts all of this into perspective. And I think with this song, you know, I don't really obviously know John Mayer personally, but I'd imagine he's a very sort of direct person, or he was, you know, maybe not having that much of a filter, which I guess could also come off as being arrogant or rude at times. And I feel like this song is a little bit around that. I mean, you could also take it as like, you know, if you're like social awkwardness, for example, not knowing, you know, saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, sort of. But it really feels like he doesn't, at least in the song when I heard it in the lyrics, I don't think there was any sort of regret as such that he said something that he thinks is maybe stupid, like my stupid mouth. It's more of like, look, this is just how I am, and I guess I'll just stay quiet. Like, you know, if I'm gonna speak, this is what I'm gonna say. You know, it's not like, oh, I need to change who I am, because I like the album is very much about him being who he wants to be.
Like I'm gonna stop speaking from now on. Like I'm gonna start doing that now.
Yeah, and that's what he says towards the end. Like, yeah.
Yeah, there's a part where it's the false ending, and
yeah. I was gonna point that out, like, and then the one more thing at the, like, it was very unexpected when I heard it, and I thought it was again one of those things where, you know.
That's a very appropriate time, like when you're actually arguing and you're just saying things and you just go on saying things and then you just stop, and it's like the amount of time you wait between saying one more thing, why is it my fault, maybe I tried too hard, and like that's what you would.
So when you have the heated argument, there's always that, like, there's a pause and it's like, okay, one more thing, you know.
Yeah, that's like a very generalized way of how arguments really take place.
Yeah,
and
it's quite genius the way it's like in the song composition. So it's, you know, the song is sort of.
Really, I really like the way he's visually appealed to the song, which where he says something about, I played a quick game of chess with the salt and pepper shaker. And she was throwing tiny balls of napkin paper, and I played a quick game of chess with the salt and pepper shaker. And like you see, you feel a lot of anxiety in just those lines. So, and the rest of the song is just about how I'm saying dumb stuff, meaningless stuff. But
and again, it's something that, you know, when you are young, like, it, you know, you do have a like. People have stupid breakups all the time, especially when they're younger.
Yeah.
You know, over sort of stupid reasons, to reuse the word from the title. And it's very much that type of thing where it's like, he's kind of like, there's no as such regret, but it's just like, look, if I speak, this happens, maybe I won't speak. And that's really it.
Yeah, and then we go down to your Body is a Wonderland, which is, I guess, what got Mayer his stardom. And
yeah, this is probably the most like commercial mainstream song out of the whole album.
Yeah. I don't know if it was intended on being commercial, but
yeah,
it's so really well crafted by the lyrics.
Yeah, so there's a story behind, because the song has a very interesting way that, you know, you have the sort of the guitar rhythm and then you have the drum beats as well. It's a very interesting sort of combination of things. And so I was reading about this. So apparently he was at the time with the musicians he was working with, the drummers and so on. He was struggling to really get the beat right for the song. He wasn't quite sure what it needs to be. And then he saw these, I think he was playing the song at like a club or somewhere informally, and he saw these girls dancing to the rhythm that they were playing at the moment. And I think that's what made him realize this is the correct choice. Because like the way he was picturing the song, I guess, wasn't even as much as a song, but it was like an experience. And when he saw the girls dancing in the specific way to that sort of rhythm, which isn't, it's not a too fast, upbeat, dancey song, but it's not too slow as well. It's just that sort of slow dancing, you know. So it's very much, it feels like it was intended to be this type of experience, that you, something that you can play in like clubs and you can play commercially. True. People can dance to, and I mean, obviously he succeeded, you know, the song was huge. And also just mentioning, you know, similar to the My Stupid Mouth, 2/3 of the way through, this song has this sort of musical break, or you could call it like an interlude, just after the bridge. And then suddenly his vocals come back. And I thought, again, this was quite an unexpected. This was the second time in this album where I didn't expect. it was something you wouldn't expect in this type of commercial right. song, I'd say, because usually you have the bridge and then you'd have the last chorus and you finish the song. But it has like a 35-second musical break, and again it goes back to it being a danceable song, so the music's playing and you're just dancing and dancing, and you don't want the song to end almost.
That's true. There's a there's a fun fact about the song where Mia wanted to add like a husky voice in the beginning, saying I'm gonna try the husky voice. So Mia wanted to add and in the morning I'm gonna pour you a bowl of Count Chocula, and I'm gonna pull some of the oat pieces out. So it tastes like there's just some more marshmallows.
You wanted that in the intro.
I mean, that was the intro, but I guess he just wanted to make it more relatable, more spiced up. Yeah,
it would have been an interesting introduction, especially, I mean, it goes with the song, because, you know, it's very, like, seductive and very much within the feel of the song. Yeah, I wonder if it's, do you know if it was his decision, or was it, like, a commercial decision?
No, I read, on the song? I read that it was his call, his like, decision. That he wanted this, but then it sounded good without it.
So. Mm-hmm. It didn't need it.
Yeah, and then one of my musical favorites is the next song, which is Neon. And I've tried listening to the lyrics and understanding the song, and I do sing along with it. I have just never been able to really, you know, like. I mean, I know what the lyrics are talking about, but I can't understand the lyrics while I'm listening to the music. I have to, like,
read the lyrics. I think that's true for a lot of the John Mayer songs, actually, because they're very musically interesting oftentimes, and the riffs are very interesting. And so sometimes when you're listening to it, the lyrics kind of get lost a little bit. But you know what this song reminds me of? Like, we all know, like, that, you know, that guy or girl at college, like, who only dates people with, like, very, like, self-destructive tendencies. Like, you know, when you go, why don't you ever date a nice guy or nice girl? And it kind of, some of the lyrics and some of that in Neon really reminds me of that, you know, like, having that type of relationships. And I guess the only other thing is, like, some of the live versions are, like, really good. Like, he's really worked that riff up and created variations thereof. And I think there's lots of variations of this track. Even I think there's like, I think his, was it his EP had it, or he, I know he previously released Neon as well before the album, and then he re-released a version of Neon in a later album. So he seems to be always, it seems like it's a song that's always been like a work of progress, or improvisation has always been part of the song. So it's always a more enjoyable experience live with this song.
I did attend his concert, and when he was on his...
Did he play Neon?
He was actually... Everyone was rooting for it. Everyone was shouting out for it.
Yeah.
But everyone... Like, John Mayer just... He actually said it out, like, I'm actually going to try and not play that song because I just couldn't make something up. But then he did. I mean, he eventually did play it. Because... Uh-huh. Because, I mean, he said that, you guys are not going to let me go without it.
Yeah.
But he just said that, I'm not going to do anything new with it. I'm just going to play what you've heard. But Neon is something that he has done or tried to do a different version of in each of his live concerts.
Yeah, that's why it feels very much like an improvisational song. Like, it's a song that he has more fun playing live than he probably has recording it. Because I guess part of the fun with the song is him improvising some of the riffs and the tunes.
True. Yeah. And next we move on to City Love. City Love, wow. I have always liked the music of, and of course it talks about like a guy moving into city life, and
yeah,
then getting into a live-in relationship probably.
Yeah.
And you know, how he's noticing different things of his partner and throughout the apartment. I've always liked the music. Like, the music is very catchy in the song, in this particular track.
Yeah. Most of them, to be honest. Like, the riffs.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I think this song, again, it feels like it's like when you're having a great time with like the person you're dating, but then you also kind of know it's not meant to be, or like they're not the right fit. Like, it's going to end. You have an expiration date. And it's very much like a city love. Like, he's almost trying to pitch it, I guess, like, you know, as a summer love sort of thing. But rather than summer love, it's called city love. But I read that apparently he didn't want to include the name Lydia in the song. There was a lot of back and forth with having the name Lydia in the song. But then I think he just said it works phonetically. So that was why they decided to keep it, as opposed to it being driven by very personal reasons. It was like, phonetically with the song, it works well. And then I think this song as well, it has almost like a false ending with a loud return, like the loud return of music. I think two-thirds of the way through or so.
Even the beginning of the song, it begins with a... Like, you don't expect that it's going to begin that way after going through Neon, after going through...
Yeah.
I mean, sure, it's a pop song, but like he starts with, "I never liked this apple much." So that's... So do you know, is this song about his life in New York?
So I think I know. What I did read was Lydia was someone in his life at that time. It is based off some... Lydia is a person based off someone he knew. So I'd imagine that relationship influenced him, but I don't know if it was specifically living, like, which city did he move into and what experience did he have. But it does feel like it's very much him moving to a big city, falling in love with someone, and then it's city love, you know. It's not going to last, in his sort of words.
Then we can move on to 83. Well, reverse to the 90.
No worries or stresses.
Yeah, and he wanted to be Superman. So
yeah,
that's... I mean, 83 is a... Well, for right now, it's nostalgic for me because I remember all the times I used to listen to it too, and
you used to listen to the song, yeah.
And now if you listen to it, and it's... the song itself is quite nostalgic.
Yeah.
Like, it talks more about, you know, how Mayer wants his... how Mayer doesn't want what he's getting, and he'd rather be six again and 6 feet small.
It goes back to a lot of the things, like we said before, right? This being, like, being in your 20s, sort of, facing the world for the first time, having all these like responsibilities and stress and pressure.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's this element of, you kind of just want to go back to being a kid. When you... I guess there's a point at which, when you're growing, because when you're young, you always want to be older, right? When you're six, you always want to be seven. You always want to be eight. You know, I remember like lying about my age, trying to seem older to like guests, or, you know, when I was like a very young age. So like, people, when you're young, you always want to be older. Because you feel like, oh, being older is cool, you know, being a kid is dumb. But then there's this point, I guess, when you grow older, you kind of realize that actually all the fun was there when I was a kid. Now there's too many responsibilities and as an adult. And it's, again, it's one of those struggles of being in your 20s or early 20s and coming to these realizations. So I feel like it goes back to this whole sort of, all these tracks really being his experiences of transitioning into his 20s and... take, and, you know, following his dreams and all the stresses and struggles that come with someone trying to follow their dreams, as opposed to going the normal route of just getting a regular job and you know, those things, like going against the norms a lot. And I think this song reflects that a little bit.
And he also talks about like himself at that's something a lot of 23, 24 year olds kind of realize at that age. Because he talks about it like, these days I feel like I was six again.
Yeah.
And so there's a lyric in the song which is called Wrapped Around Your Finger, which is a reference to a song by Police which released in 1983.
Interesting.
And, so like listening to Wrapped Around Your Finger and
then
it goes back to 83.
Yeah, it feels like most of these songs he probably wrote between probably the ages of, I want to say like 18 to 23 when this album came out. Like it was very much his transition period into 20s and when, you know, you really become independent and, okay, if you want to follow your dream, what does that mean? So like with Why Georgia, it was...
Maybe that was his plan, like coming from... Maybe that was his plan, like coming from the EP that he dropped in 99, and like he wanted to get the word out, and that, you know, there is someone who's trying to do something, and because that was his mission with this album as well, which is quite clear, and like, you know, there's this guy trying to do his thing.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to break the norms. He doesn't want to listen to anyone. He doesn't want to do what people are telling him to do.
Telling him, yeah.
So, yeah. And then you move on to 3x5.
Mm-hmm.
So, 3x5 is... I mean, I have always imagined this to be like... like, while I'm listening to the song, it's mostly about compositions, framing and compositions, a photograph, because that's what 3x5 is. But,
yeah.
And like he talks about sunrise, watching that sunrise, and do you have the lyrics in front of
you? You know, I don't have the lyrics, but I just wanted to say that it's this song 3x5, like I for me it really feels like, especially the chorus and stuff, it's like, you know, when you go alone, like traveling, and you experience something, and you, like a sunrise, and it's something that you kind of, maybe you wanted, you wish you could share that experience with someone, say like it's like a long distance relationship,
yeah.
It could be family, like if you're living away from family, or, you know, however, so you can always take a photograph, but I think, because he even says no more photographs, I think it's like, a photograph can capture the image, but it doesn't really capture that feeling of being there watching it. And it's true, very much, the song is like a longing for being able to like share that, you know, like I kind of like wish you were here sort of, you know, elements.
Mm-hmm.
So it really feels in that sense of like he's someone that perhaps is used to taking a lot of photographs. He loves going to places, taking photos, but at the same time, he's realizing he's not sharing that experience with anyone. And he really wishes, I think there's this reference in the lyrics to like, next time, you know, you'll be here. Like, it's not going to be a photograph. And I think, yeah, it's very much like a long distance, like not just a romantic relationship, but even like a friendship or family, not being able to share some experiences that you kind of wish you could share with them. I guess is the way that I took the whole song. Yeah, I was watching this video where he said he didn't want to include 3x5 originally in this album. He wanted to leave that song out for another year or so. And then I think this there was an online release for this album first, which didn't have this song. And then there was a proper release for the album, which then did include 3x5 as well.
Okay.
So I think there was some hesitance on his part to include it at this stage. Maybe he hadn't finished writing it. Or he was still like working through some of the aspects, but I mean the song came out really great, so I imagine he was able to finalize all of that by the time he recorded it. And again, just going back to the, you know, again the whole thing about growing up, and it's like, you know, it's when you start traveling by yourself, when you're traveling with your family, and you know, and you move out of school and stuff, so you don't really travel with your friends, your school friends and stuff. I think there's a lot of that aspect in this song as well. Going to that sort of element of that loneliness that comes with growing up sometimes. So it feels very personal.
I just connected with the song basis of the visual appeal in it. Like, he's defining the scenes in front of you.
He's describing it to, like, the best he can. And I think that it comes to that, right? He's trying to describe it to, like, the person he loves or he wants to share it with.
Exactly, but
I think he even says somewhere, like, the words can't really do it justice, you know? There's, like, a line in there somewhere referring to that. No more letters, I think he says, or something. Oh, I'm writing this letter to you, but it's going to be empty anyway. I think there's something he says along those lines in the beginning of the song. Yeah, it's like, when you open this letter, it's going to be empty anyway. And I think it's just him being like, I don't want to write about things, and I don't want to take photographs and send it to you. I want you to be here next time.
Yeah, with the line that's you should have seen that sunrise with your own eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's as clear as one can be in the song.
Yeah.
And so the next song is Love Song for No One. Which is... I think that's, again, it's not for a lover. It's... Or is it for a lover?
I think it more comes off it like as sort of kind of just being lonely. And then... So this song, I think, doesn't he say it's more of like he is... hoping to find someone, and he's like, he wants them to come soon, you know, like he's like, where are you, when am I gonna run into you, almost. And there's like this element of like, he's single, he's waiting to meet the love of his life. I think especially in the bridge, I have written down that line, could I have missed my chance. So he also has that anxiety of like, maybe I messed up, maybe I was supposed to meet them before, and could I have missed it? So there's a bit of anxiety there, but it's just like waiting to meet, you know. Again, it goes back to that thing, you know, you're told, or like a lot of people are led to believe, you know, like, oh, once you're, you know, you're 18, you're 20, you're going to meet a nice girl, you know, this is going to happen. And it's very much him waiting for that to happen for himself. And he's questioning himself as well. Like, is it going to happen for me? Like, have I missed my chance? Has that ship sailed already?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the part of the album where Rebel, who started the album, is now falling in love. Like, I think since probably Your Body is a Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's just falling in love, and then comes Neon, City Love.
It's like falling in love with a person that you haven't met, like an imaginary, like in your head building.
Someone you'd like to meet, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Someone you'd like to meet. So it's very much of like a hopeless romantic, essentially. Ted in How I Met Your Mother probably listens to the song on repeat.
Yeah. Probably. And so the next song is Back to You. And, I think it's just a rebound song.
Yeah. It's like breakup, but sort of still in love, but dealing with that breakup, sort of.
Don't want to let you go, but I guess.
Yeah.
I guess you have to, but then I don't want you to. But
yeah, it's
you know, it's very confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a difficult breakup. And again, you know, relatable to someone in their early 20s. Very much so. Mm-hmm. Like, especially when you have had, like, I guess when you have your first major breakup. And then there's that feeling of like...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, these songs, even though they sound very commercial and like pop, you could say, even danceable, some of them, they're still very personal songs. They're just... composed in a way which is very easily digestible, I suppose. You know, if you were to compose the music in a different way, these songs could also be very depressing in a sense, but they're not, because generally the music and everything is more welcoming. But the lyrical content and the themes of the song are very personal struggles.
I think most of the songs were written by John Mayer himself.
I'd imagine so. There was one, so it feels very personal.
I think there are three songs which are co-credited to, I think it was producer at the time.
Yeah, I'd imagine even with the co-writing, I'd imagine he probably had this idea, or he had probably had like some draft of a song, some personal feelings he put on the page, and then he needed help making that into a song. Because, like I say, it feels very much his voice in the sense of it's his experience that he's singing.
That's true. Like, the words coming from him, they feel very rightly spoken because he knows genuine. What he's trying to express. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, so that's just a Rebound song. Then we've got Great Indoors, which I felt was just about, you know, introverts doing their thing.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's like, just... get out there, stop watching TV, you know.
I mean, yeah, it's literally...
Yeah, no, I was just saying, if you go from Back to You, which is like, you know, you had a breakup and you're stuck, and I usually, the next phase in the breakup is almost before you start going out, you start going out again. There's this phase of being introverted where you stop talking to anyone, even like I've had friends who've had breakups and then they stop talking to their friends because they just want to be left alone in their home and I guess watch TV. It's not even that they're crying or they're just watching TV and trying to figure stuff out. So I feel like following Back to You, it almost feels like, you know, like a narrative moving forward. Like he's had a bad breakup and you get stuck in your old routines. But I would say, I think the song he addresses, it's not in first person because I think he says, you need to get out, you, and it could be him talking to himself. But it's one of the songs where he's not referring to himself as me. He keeps saying, I think in the lyrics, it's very much like your pulse, you know, or like feel your pulse. That's, you know, you need to get out, sort of.
He's actually, I did notice that he's actually played a lot with the narratives of the songs. Like, it's from him, it's from a third person, it's for a third person.
It's like dedicated to someone, yeah.
Yeah. So, and he switched the lyrics in between the songs, which...
Yeah.
Like you suddenly realize that okay, now he's not talking about himself. Now he's talking to someone else, and like that switch happens very, because I think you notice that switch because of his music. Like his music changes the environment of that particular zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also like Great Indoors. I feel like it's a bit more, it's very relatable now with like the lockdown and quarantining and everything, you know, like being stuck indoors. And when you feel like you want to go out, like this is, you know, it's very sort of incentivizing.
It's like, goodbye extroverts. So the next song we've got is Not Myself. Is basically him trying to justify himself, but saying, would you like this person? Because this person is not me. And then you always say
like,
that you like
me. Yeah, there's like elements of like mood swings, right? Like I'm very different sometimes than I am normally. Are you still okay with that?
Yeah. And I like how he's very innocently captured these feelings that if say you and I were trying to express at 23, 24, we'd be rebels.
It's a very elegant like, composition. There's not a, even in his voice when he's singing, there's not a lot of like anger or frustration. It's very soothing, but the lyrical content does have a little bit of maybe frustration or helplessness in certain songs, like this being one of them. There's some anxiety there, and I think with this song as well, there's like, I guess you could also view it not just like mood swings or whatever, but like also, you know, I guess just having a everyone has usually like a secret side of themselves that they don't really show to everyone. And so in any relationship, there comes a point where I guess you need to slowly introduce them to this other side you might have. And then there are all the anxieties that come with that.
Yeah. That's actually a good perspective. Because he does, I mean, that's a very different perspective from what I was trying to mention. Like,
well, yeah, no, for me, completely. It's very subjective, right? It's yeah.
Yeah.
The lyrics
and he's captured it. Yeah, he's captured it pretty well. So the last song would be St. Patrick's Day. And I feel the music of that song is quite, like, you feel like an end of an album.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing the album, you'd actually be like, okay, this probably would be the last song. With the music, like I think there's this harmonious part in between where before he says nowhere November will see our goodbyes. So like it ends with a, you know, very, as you said, like the rest of the composition is quite welcoming, the music is welcoming.
Yeah, I think the content of the song itself, like the lyrics, I feel like they're very much about knowing or coming to the understanding that this relationship is going to end. Because, like, he talks about, you know, we're going to be together for the holidays. Because, like, there's this element of, like, sometimes when people are in a relationship, the commitments you have kind of keep you together. So, like, say you need to attend a marriage in 2 months. Like, you're not going to, you know, you don't want to break up before that. And then, you know, so then there's, like, Christmas. And no one wants to be alone at Christmas. No one wants to be alone at New Year's. He references, you know, Valentine's Day is there for them to be together. But then you have St. Patrick's Day. And after that, there's no reason to be together. At least from, in terms of commitments and holidays. Because I think, you know, after like March, April, you don't really have any big holiday until much later. So it's very much an ending the album on this. It's because it is a song about ending a relationship eventually and closing the book. I think
it's
what you were also
like putting in an expiry on whoever you're with.
Exactly.
Like, you know, this is where it's gonna end, and we start through this, we go through this, and that's where we end at.
Exactly, and I'd say, and we can say this for all his songs actually, they're very honest. So he's not pretending to be. Like, if you were to contrast it with other, you know, other artists and songs, and again, they're great, but it's almost the opposite of going back to, like, if you think of Jason Mraz and if you think of the song Geek in the Pink, it's the songs in here are very much opposite of that, because they're not about, I'm the greatest, I'm super cool, I can, you know, do all these things. They're kind of more, it's like an honest diary, you know, like My Stupid Mouth, you know, 3x5 is like a letter. Not Myself, St. Patrick's Day, all of these songs, they're very much like a personal diary where he's just being brutally honest. Like, this is him, you know, he has a stupid mouth. And like, he's had this type of relationship where, you know, you're going to break up, but you're kind of staying together for the commitments and then you're going to end it. Like, he's very honest about these things. It's not a happily ever after scenario. I'd say the happiest song is probably Your Body is a Wonderland, which also ends on a happy note. Because rest of the songs, they kind of end on like, well, this is going to end. This relationship is going to end, you know, like, are you going to trust me? You know, it's very much of that brutal honesty that comes forward through his songs, which are easy to miss because the music is very catchy and welcoming and you tend to not pay attention to the lyrics.
I think like one theme that I was actually trying to follow throughout the album was that all of his songs have like they become very analytical with their lyrics. Like, he breaks things apart and
like expresses them, like deconstructing.
Yeah, like he's telling the process, like this is going to be like what the process is going to be like. For example, your body is a wonderland is a very good process to making love. And my stupid mouth is just a good deconstruction to, you know, arguments or like explanations, justifications that you constantly have to, you know, get yourself proven right.
Yeah, that need of, and yeah, I see what you mean. It's, it's very much from looking at from like an outside perspective. And well, I guess you, when you said earlier, it's very introspective. Like you're analyzing things retroactively, but you're also trying it's like from a third perspective. You're not trying to be biased by putting yourself in there, but it's just you're seeing things for what they are and then writing a song about it. And that's why I guess the songs don't necessarily have a happy or positive ending often, because he's not like, but you know, we're gonna stay forever. It's very much like, well, I don't think so. St. Patrick's Day is coming, and I mean, you know, so it's very much, I think, being honest. And I think you're right, like that introspective analysis. And I think if
there's analysis,
if there was like an alternate title for this album, or like if there was a subtitle, I'd put something like Struggles of This Artist in His 20s, basically, because that's what it feels like to me. It's like he talks about his dreams, his ambitions, but then it's all his like his fears and the struggles he has facing the world, trying to do, like, there's very much that, you know, like thinking of like, you're this person and there's this person you want to be, but then there's this person that the world wants to mold you into, and you kind of have to fight back. Yeah. And then there's this middle ground where you're someone who you wanted to be, but you still find your place within the world, you still fit in somehow. And I think there's a lot of, even with the relationships and stuff, I think there's a lot of those struggles coming through. But very strong debut album, you know, I think, right?
Yeah, and it establishes like musically speaking. Well.
Yeah, it establishes, you know, the John Mayer sound. Like, this is what John Mayer songs, you know, the guitar riffs, the beats, the lyrics, it very much establishes him as
what I think he's,
this is what you get.
Over here, like in all of these songs, he's mostly exploring his music. Like he's trying, because every song goes on a beat, but it's just a combination of different instruments altogether. Mm-hmm. And it was his first album, so it's quite experimental, but it's a really good album. So that covers the album Wolf Squares. And please let us know what you've been listening to, and if you have any comments about this particular album. And see you next time. So, let me know if it's a husky voice or not, so I'll fix it again.